Friday is just a day before the weekend. But after this Friday, neighborhood never leaves.
Football Fridays are on the Fan. Friday,
Friday. 2012 AFC West champs. Yeah.
It's a Bud Light Football Friday on the Fan.
We're talking about finishing, right?
Football is a rough game and often a cruel one.
Every time you lose, you die a little bit. You die inside a portion of you.
Time to get you pumped for the pigskin. Bud Light, the official beer sponsor of the NFL. Here we go. And as we gear up for our football weekend on Sports Radio 104.3, the Fan.
You know I'm getting the ball. They know I'm getting the ball tonight, too.
We can't wait.
I'll get the ball. I'm going to get the ball tonight.
We live and breathe it all day long right here with you on the Fan.
How much y'all charge?
Getting ready for football and to crack a few Bud Lights this weekend.
Hey, we're calling the plays, all right?
Shut up,
Denver's football station.
Ain't too much talking that's been going on tonight. All about hitting.
Now, here's Sandy Clough.
Our third and final hour on a Bud Light Football Friday here on the Fan. Bud Light, the official beer sponsor of the NFL. Here we go with our third and final hour. Sandy Clough with you on Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3, The Fan. Earlier on, we were joined by Terrell Davis of NBC Sports and Chad Brown. Now back for his pre-Christmas consultation session with us is the good Dr. Rick Perea, professor of sports psychology from Metro State and the University of Colorado. Rick will be in studio for the entire hour. Your phone calls, 303-228-1043, and your texts on the Total Beverage text line, 29588, are very much welcome. Good to see you, Dr. Perea.
Great to see you, Sandy. I'm fired up, ready to go. It's football season. It's getting to that point in the season where we can start to play for real, if you will. And it's the season of giving. And I just have to say this real quick. You know, Alabama lost to Auburn. And as you know, we do some work with Alabama. And I'll tell you what, I just want to congratulate Auburn. They beat us. They beat us fair and square. But I think that it's going to be interesting in the years to come in that rivalry.
There is not a rivalry quite like that one. Certainly not in major college sports.
Right.
When it comes to football, even in terms of basketball, I don't think there's anything quite like that. You live that rivalry and have lived it for quite some time.
Absolutely.
And the psychological aspects are intriguing, but I don't know even if you could adequately explain, given your area of expertise, exactly what happened at the end of the game this year.
Well, I'll tell you, it's interesting because in psychology, we call it cognitive framing. And what that means is you frame things from a particular perspective.
Yeah.
And if you look at that Auburn-Alabama game, when Alabama lines up for that field goal with 1 second left, and by the way, Coach Saban may have wished that he didn't negotiate that last second after all, but you look at that play, and even the astute football fan would frame that there's two possibilities. Either Alabama's going to hit the field goal and win, or they're going to miss the field goal and we're going to go to overtime.
Right.
So that's the two frames. Now, there are actually three frames and possibly four frames.
As we found out.
And as we found out, the third frame happened. And so for a lot of people, including people in our household, in our family, and in the Alabama family, we're literally shocked. And but again, I give Auburn all the credit in the world for putting a kid back and running it back. And here you go with the psychological aspect. You know, we went back and you look at the tape. And the kicking team, as soon as that ball's hit, and the offensive linemen know this, as soon as they hear that boom from the ball being hit, they're supposed to fan out in their lanes and their spokes. And as you can see, when the ball is hit, most of the offensive linemen, including the upbacks, just watch the ball in flight. So they don't get into their lanes, they don't get into their spokes, and there you go. They don't force that kid to cut back in, and he walks up the sidelines. But again,
and that is perhaps the least athletic, too. Now, that isn't psychology, but just right. In terms of physiology,
yeah,
that's the least athletically gifted of the various special teams groups, right? Your
field, yeah.
Maybe your extra point team
right.
is roughly the same.
Right.
But your field goal team, your extra point team, involve blockers,
right?
Not your best athletes.
Right. Well, but
you're saying psychologically, they did not pay attention to their assignments.
Absolutely. It's called task cohesion. They didn't take care of their task. And you know what, Sandy, it really falls back on the coaches. Let's be real honest. It's not the players. The players really respond to the coaches. And I don't think there was enough emphasis when that field goal
team.
On those
third and fourth options that you were talking about.
Yeah, that it wasn't enough emphasis put on that. But I can guarantee you this, going forward, Alabama football, when they attempt a field goal in the future, will not allow a returner to a returner for a touchdown. You can mark those words today.
And now we know Nick Saban is staying at Alabama. So we can particularly mark those words today. There will not be any change at Alabama. We'll get into the Broncos stuff here in just a few moments as well. But we want to remind everybody that, again, Dr. Puri will be in the studio with us for the entire hour. Your phone calls and, yes, your texts are welcome. With the Broncos coming off this loss, and we'll get more deeply into their situation here as we go along this morning, I think the loss last week was taken by fans as hard as the previous two losses were, because at least with the previous two losses, they were road games, good teams. Indianapolis has been a little up and down, but That's a good team, especially at home, a team that was in the playoffs last year. New England is obviously as consistently excellent as any team in the NFL has been, even in the absence of championships won over the last 9 years. Take the last 5 years, the last 10 years in the NFL. The way the Broncos lost bothered people, but the loss itself not so much. The loss itself bothered people last week, but also the way the Broncos played. Again, from your perspective, particularly emphasizing the psychology, how did the Broncos come up so short when it seemed not only physically but mentally they weren't nearly as prepared to play last Thursday night as the Chargers were?
Yeah.
How did they fall short that
Well,
week?
I think it goes back to, you know, Coach Fox.
Why did they fall short?
Yeah, Coach Fox often, you know, comments to the media that, you know, the other team gets paid, too, and they're professionals. And, you know, one thing I want to emphasize is athletes at the professional level in the NFL, they're all great athletes, Sandy, and they're all very capable. The difference between first-teamers and second-teamers is not as much as people think. So I want people to think about, you know, on any given Sunday or any given Thursday night, in this case, you know, one team can beat another team, and turnovers make a difference. You know, psychological momentum makes a difference. And I've heard a lot of people reference that the Broncos were tired. Well, you know what? San Diego had
physical
to play on a short
fatigue,
week team.
Mental fatigue.
Yeah.
Didn't seem to afflict San Diego.
Right.
They weren't tired, and they had to travel.
Right. They had to travel. So I think we can make more of that sometimes than it really is. The bottom line is, on a 16-week schedule, there are going to be games, there are going to be weeks that teams don't perform to their peak level.
Right.
That's just the reality of it. That may or may not happen to the Broncos. I don't know. We'll have to see how it plays out. If indeed that was an off week for them in terms of their, you know, their concentration, their focus, their cognitive, their thinking process in preparation, then that's okay, because that's going to happen. But if it's more symptomatic of a deeper issue, maybe in terms of motivation, what we call intrinsic versus extrinsic motivation, and those are fancy words for internal and external, if this team cannot find a way to motivate itself internally on a consistent basis, then that's going to run up against a problem when it comes to the playoffs. Because I'll tell you what, I look around the NFL, and I watched a few games this past week, and I see some teams really starting to come together. You can see them playing well together and really reaching that peak. And that's what really teams are looking for. You know, you can go 13-3, you can go 16-0, whatever it is. That's a quantitative assessment again. And at the bottom line is, you got to be playing well in the playoffs to make a difference. And the Broncos learned that last year. So again, I don't mean the bearer of bad news, but I caution Denver fans to get too excited about quantitative assessments and understand that on any given day, depending on a multitude of factors, anybody can beat anybody else in the NFL.
And especially when it comes to the playoffs. And I think that was the lesson of last week,
yes,
when the top three seeded teams in the AFC all lost.
Yes.
But the six teams seeded behind them, 4 through 9, all won.
Right.
That there's a compression in many ways within the AFC now that makes the prospect of facing even a fifth or sixth seed along the way almost as daunting as the prospect of facing New England or Cincinnati or Indianapolis.
Yeah, you know, in sports psychology, I liken it to this, and you've heard me say this before. You know, it's the wolf climbing the hill versus the wolf at the top of the hill.
Yeah.
The wolf climbing the hill is a hungry, thirsty, you know, passionate animal. The wolf at the top of the hill tends to relax a little bit.
Okay, but why should the Broncos be the wolf at the top of the hill?
Because
I know we got a break here, but we'll talk about this more on the other side of the break. But that's where I want to focus on that. It's fascinating with the Broncos because you're depicting the Broncos being the wolf on top of the hill.
Yep.
The wolf on the top of the hill hasn't won anything.
Well, they haven't won anything, but everybody's picking them. And that's the psychology of it. Everybody's picking them. Their quantitative record has them at the wolf at the top of the hill, and people buy into that. If they were 2-12, people wouldn't be picking them. Okay? So my point is psychologically they've bought into what they're hearing as well too. And that's what I think Del Rio and Fox are being really careful about is the psychology behind their own players buying into what everybody's telling them about themselves.
Dr. Rick Perea, our in-studio guest for the entire hour, 303-228-1043, 295-88 on the Total Beverage text line. We talk a lot about this subject on these programs, all of them here on The Fan. The NFL now a passing game. Mike Kliss of the Denver Post saying the other day, it's not only a pass happy league, it's a pass easy league. Dr. Rick Perea says, maybe yes, in a quantitative sense that's true, but psychologically, the running game bears watching. It's important. It matters. He'll explain at 11:13. This is your home for the best live and local coverage. Broncos, the NFL, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan. It is 11:17. Sandy Clef with you. Dr. Rick Perea, our in-studio guest on your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan, 303-228-1043, 295-88 on the Total Beverage text line. The psychology of the running game, whether it was a psychological hindrance or an actual quantitative problem with the Broncos last week, they had 18 yards rushing on 11 carries against the San Diego Chargers. Running game was no factor. For the first time all year, the Broncos allowed an opponent to rush for at least 100 yards against them. Ryan Matthews of the Chargers, who gained in total almost 200 yards on the ground for the evening, big part of their 27-20 win over the Broncos. You've made the point that running the ball statistically may not mean as much, may not happen as often in the modern-day NFL, but psychologically, it's important.
Oh, it's huge. I mean, if you look at the Broncos and the teams that they've struggled with, most of those teams have been able to run the ball. You know, as an ex-defensive player, I can tell you, Sandy, that when someone runs the ball on you, you don't usually break down physically first. You break down psychologically because you kind of look around and you say, crap, is there anything we can do to stop this? Any pressures, any, you know, different games we can run, twists, what we can do to slow it down? But here's what happens. So Denver, ironically, their offense is such a high-powered, quick-scoring offense that Denver's defense gets put back out on the field very quickly. So if you have a strong running game, that defense gets to sit down. A couple colleagues of mine did some kind of quasi or pseudo research recently, and we determined that it takes about 21 to 22% more expenditure of energy to play defense than it does offense.
That's fascinating.
It's fascinating because you think about offense is assignment football. Even when they play, change the play at the line of scrimmage, it's assignment football. We did some research and we just looked at defensive backs, corners, and outside linebackers. So, for example, a corner will make three changes of direction in the same time span that a receiver will make one change of direction. So you look at the energy expenditure of reacting to
more stressful.
It's more stressful somatically on the body. It's more stressful cognitively on the mind. So it takes more energy to play defense than it does offense. So because of that factor, Sandy, it's paramount that offenses protect their defenses. What does that mean? That means they control the ball and put their defense on the sidelines resting. Conversely, you want to do the other thing to the other team. You want to keep their defense out there, and that's why you want to run the ball. So I think teams have figured out the way we can slow this Manning machine down is really to hold the ball. and we run the ball. And if you look at some of the teams out there, they're built to do that. They are structurally, personnel-wise, and really schematically to do that. I know Kansas City's been throwing the ball a little bit more, but again, the way you call the game in the playoffs versus the way you call the game in the regular season is psychologically 100% different. And once you get into December, January, and now into February, the Super Bowl, the weather changes. You have to be able to run the ball. You have to be able to stop the run. So psychologically, I know this is going around the league. People are saying, let's run the ball against Denver. Let's hold the ball. Let's keep Manning off the field. And, you know, Denver's offense is very sexy to watch. Okay, they score quick. They put a lot of points on the board. There's records in the balance, and that's all very sexy. But the bottom line is winning the game. And if you win ugly 17-10 or 21-17, that matters more than just, you know, putting up all these numbers and then your defense being put in a bad spot. Because I'll guarantee you, Del Rio will never admit this on camera or on the radio or to anybody, but having those guys on offense score so quickly and having his guys having to go back out there on defense right away really puts a physical and psychological fatigue on them.
My reaction to the game last week was that Denver looked disorganized and dispirited. And I thought the lack of organization was most prominent. I don't think it started with their being dispirited and then they became disorganized. I kind of thought it looked to me as if it was the other way around. Mm-hmm. You're talking about various reasons that Denver is struggling defensively, the lack of cohesion that we mm-hmm. see. To what do you attribute that lack of cohesion?
Well, the biggest factor is Vickerson's out. You know, Vickerson plays what we call the one technique, and that's the weak shade, you know, the guy that shades to the weak side off the center. And he draws the double team. You know, the 1-3 and the 5 technique, and to the layperson, those are your defensive tackles, and your 5 technique is your defensive end. The 1-3 and the 5, those are vital to stopping the run. When you look at the old Pittsburgh teams, you know, that had Casey Hampton as the one technique, the New England team, the kid they lost
Will
this
Fork.
Year, Wilfork.
Yeah.
Wilfork, I mean, he's a one technique.
Yeah.
Those guys are vital to stopping the run. And I think Denver recognized that, and that's why they took the kid out of Carolina. They're hoping to groom him as a one technique, but what they've found is it takes a
this
little more.
This is Sylvester Williams, who is not ready to do what Kevin Vickerson did so well.
Right. And so behind Vickerson and Wolf and some of those guys being out, that has really disrupted that task cohesion on the defensive line. And what I mean by task cohesion is gap integrity, gap responsibility. If that A gap is not bottled up by that one technique, in other words, that guard can get off and get off on the linebacker because Vickerson is not in there demanding the double team. Okay. So if a lesser player's in there, and the center can reach block him good enough so he can the guard can now combo to the linebacker, then that negates the one technique altogether. So that's where the breakdown starts. And then so what happens is it's kind of like it's like rain running downhill. So now you got a guard on to Wesley Woodyard right away.
There's your Wesley Woodyard issue.
And there's your Wesley Woodyard issue because he's undersized. He's not a true Mike inside linebacker that can take that pounding. So it starts on the defensive line with the 1-3 and the 5, but once that happens, it rains over into the linebackers as well, hence maybe Wesley's drop-off in performance.
Do the Broncos – we had Chad Brown on a couple of weeks ago, and he said the Broncos need, with this Wesley Woodyard business, they need to get out in front of the story and stop reacting to it. And, you know, there are three or four different versions of the story from the Bronco point of view. Wesley Woodyard's upset. Some of his teammates have come to his defense, which I think is a good thing for team dynamics. They should be coming to his defense and everything else. They've handled so many things well this year, off the field stuff, on the field stuff that they've had to cope with. This they seem to be struggling to handle, the whole Woodyard thing. How can they clean it up in 2 weeks going into the playoffs?
Well,
or do they have to make a determination? Yes, if you're going to get anything out of Wesley Woodyard, you got to get him back on the outside.
Yeah. Here's the tough thing, Sandy.
He's playing out of position.
Yeah, none of us really know the truth. That's the key. You know, we're on the outside looking in. As the media, you know, you ask questions, do you get the truth? You don't always get the truth. The reality is I don't think the Broncos are resting him because that would really take away from cohesion. You really want that task and that social cohesion going into the playoffs. So there must be a reason. It could be, you know, he was banged up a little bit earlier in the year. But if indeed he has been, you know, been getting outplayed by other linebackers, then really they don't need to offer an example or a discussion to us. The reality is the team knows the truth. And this may be a psychological tactic, too, by Del Rio to motivate him. And that's kind of a scary thing, too, if he has to do that to motivate one of his pros that way. But that does happen.
It's a captain.
Yeah, but that does happen sometimes. I mean, some people, again, psychologically, Sandy, players, when they start hearing how good they are about themselves, I always had a college coach that said this so well. He says, when you start believing what everybody tells you, that you're an All-American, you're shot. You've got to believe. And let's go back to that wolf analogy. When you're the wolf climbing the hill, you're thirsty, you're hungry. But when people start telling you, wow, you're a Pro Bowl player, you're one of the top players, some players' personality cannot handle that. They ingest it, digest it, process it. They actually kind of start looking and patting themselves on the back, and their motivation drops by that hair. And that's all it takes in the NFL to get outplayed.
303-228-1043, 295-88, Total Beverage Text Line. Sandy Clef with you. Dr. Rick Perea, our in-studio guest on your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL. Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan. Sandy Clef with you, 11:31 on your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL. Bud Light Football Friday, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan. It's one of the things, Dr. Rick Perea, our in-studio guest, that makes this Sunday matchup maybe not competitively intriguing, but from a psychological point of view, what a wonderful case study. You talked about the Broncos as the wolf at the top of the hill, even though they haven't, in terms of championship accomplishment, done anything yet.
Right.
Explain for me, the Houston Texans, how quickly and completely over the last 3 months they have fallen apart.
Yes. Well, again, and you're going to get tired of me saying this, but again, that's a quantitative assessment. They've lost 12 games in a row.
Yes.
And that's quantitative.
Yes, it certainly is.
But you know what, Sandy? They may be going through a transition. I, that team is too talented to just lay down that way.
Yeah, somebody said they didn't have leadership before. J.J. Watt, to me, is a wonderful leader.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if no other thing, he leads on the field by example.
Exactly.
I mean, my gosh. But, you know, that team is too talented to just lay down. I was really kind of surprised to see Gary get dismissed at the time he did.
Given the health issues he'd had, to fire him like that.
Right.
I think McNair's a great owner, by the way, and he gave Gary a shot 3 years ago to continue when a lot of owners would have fired him three years ago. So I'm not being critical of McNair, but I thought the timing was curious, absolutely.
Right. Right. But I think, you know, I wouldn't read too much into that record again because, you know, They are a team in transition. You know, their quarterback position is unsettled. They're probably going to move in a different direction next year. So I wouldn't put too much credibility into that record in terms of teams playing them. And I'll guarantee you, Coach Fox and Del Rio this week are emphasizing that, you know, this could be a trap game. You know, people are just assuming Denver will walk in there. And you know, you mentioned about the wolf at the top of the hill. Let me explain what exactly I mean by that. The wolf at the top of the hill doesn't mean that Denver is that wolf, but if the perception is that they're that wolf, meaning they think they're that or other people think they're that, then that's all that matters. Whether they are or not, it doesn't matter. It's the perception that they're the wolf at the top of the hill.
This cover on Sports Illustrated this week, with all due respect to Manning and his being fully deserving of this honor, other teams look at that. It's not so much as a sign of disrespect toward Manning, but is how Manning has explained this is a team honor, and it is in some ways. And all the records that people talk about, that Denver's on the verge of setting, particularly on the offensive side of the ball, other teams look at that and say, hey, we're playing a lot better than they're playing right now. We're
absolutely
starting to peak. They're leveling off. They're 2-2 of their last four games, and yet they're still being talked about as if they've been 3-1, 4-0 in their last four games, and they got, if not the Super Bowl wrapped up, then at least the AFC wrapped up. The odds came out this week, our Bovada odds out of Las Vegas. Broncos are better than even money to win the AFC title.
Right. Well, again, you know, that's all based on quantitative assessments. Yep. Again, and you mentioned the Manning Award, and it's probably well deserved. That's fine. But you know what? As defensive teams, they feed on that stuff. They love to see, you know, Denver's over there talking about how good they are and Manning's winning these awards.
Or other people are talking about it.
Yeah, other teams are talking about it and say, hey, let's go in there and let's show them who we are. So, again, we got to caution the quantitative versus the qualitative assessment. And I would say that, you know, the Texans have fallen quickly, but they're a team in transition and they'll be back. And obviously there's a benefit to them finishing the way they are for the next year's draft. So they'll be back next year and they'll do well. I don't think it'll be Wade Phillips at the helm, but they'll be back. With the Broncos, they got to be really careful psychologically to not get full of themselves and not believe what everybody's telling them of how good they are. You know, if you look at their defense, they're a defense in transition. There's a fair amount of injuries. There's a lot of people playing different positions. So they're really trying to build that social and task cohesion that I talk about. And it'll be interesting the last 2 weeks to see how they approach it with, you know, their starters and moving people in and out of different positions. Because, again, going into that first week of playoffs, they'll probably get a bye. But that second week, they're going to have to be playing at peak levels because we all saw what happened last year if they're not.
A couple of interesting texts. The Total Beverage text line, 29588 from the 303. It's not a good sign when players don't know why they have been benched. Good leadership requires making expectations clear and holding people to known, well-articulated standards.
Yeah, that's true. But again, you know, this NFL is such a different league than it was 10, 15 years ago. There's so much media coverage. Coaches are very paranoid of giving out information.
Obviously.
Yeah, and so I think that, you know, Del Rio, for lack of a better word, he doesn't want to necessarily show or tip his hand of what's really going on with his defense. And I can respect him for that. So I think to the texter, I think...
And now Fox is back, and he is even more reluctant to do so.
Yeah, I think the texter is right. In any organization, you would like clear communication and let people know what their roles are, what the expectations are. But in this context, I think the Broncos really, they feel like, you know what, we know what's going on. We know how to prepare this team. We get paid to do this. So they're not showing all they know, and they do that on a weekly basis.
All right. On your wolf at the top of the hill theory from the 303, this is why it's now better that Seattle is the Super Bowl favorite. According to the odds, that is true. Let them carry those expectations and be the wolf at the top of the hill for a while.
Yeah. Well, again, it's, you know, Seattle is a team that doesn't have a Hall of Fame, future Hall of Fame quarterback. And I think that's the real difference here with Denver, that people believe in them, is because you got number 18 and versus you got a second-year quarterback over there at Seattle. Seattle looks great. There's no doubt about it. I saw them play the other day. They look great. They look very cohesive. They play together. They seem very humble. Versus Denver, Denver is kind of this machine that can just score points, you know, left and right. But defensively, they just look disheveled right now. And I think that's one of the things that Denver really needs to get shored up before they go into the playoffs. Because, again, you've got to be able to stop the run and run the ball to win in the playoffs. And I'll stand by that.
All right. You can see... as you have pointed out here over the past 35 minutes or so, some teams, particularly in the AFC, starting to peak. We've talked about that a little bit. Top three seeds lost last week. Denver, New England, Cincinnati. The next six seeds, 4 through 9, all won. Out of those six who won last week, are you talking in particular about all of them, some of them, just one of them? Teams starting to peak in the AFC play better right now. Seems like Baltimore fits that. Miami fits that. San Diego may fit that. Kansas City, you buy into Kansas City's two-game winning streak, even though some of the cynics among us, myself included, I guess, suggest, well, yeah, they beat up on Washington and Oakland, two teams that physiologically and psychologically seem dead in the water.
Right. Well, yeah, but, you know, you look at Kansas City, Sandy, and they are built, in my opinion, to win in the playoffs. They are really built because they can run the ball, okay? They've proven that. They can run the ball so they can control the clock, and that's the big key. They can throw the ball efficiently enough, okay? They're not going to throw it around the yard for 400 or 500 yards, but I don't think they have to. They have a defense that can really keep, you know, an offense stymied. They stop the run. They do it out of a forefront, what we call a 50 reduction front. They do it out of a forefront. They get pressure from a forefront. So when they bring that fifth or even a sixth guy, they can really make things happen. So Kansas City is an intriguing team. Now, I don't want the callers to think that I'm saying Kansas City is going to win the Super Bowl. I don't think they necessarily will. The laws of probability would assert that they will not. But I think that's a team to be reckoned with. The Ravens, even though they just barely won the other night, they looked great on defense. They have energy on defense. I love the play calling they had on defense. They were really bringing pressure from a lot of different angles. You know, when you can bring pressure from your strong safety, you're a pretty confident defense. And they were bringing it from a lot of different pressure packages and angles. That builds psychological cohesion. So they look good. So there are some teams that are starting to, you know, that wolf that's climbing the hill, that are starting to really kind of peak, and this is the right time to do it. And Denver still has time. Don't get me wrong. Denver still has time to peak and get going for the playoffs, but I would say it's about time these next 2 weeks that they really show that social and that task cohesion, especially on the defensive side of the ball.
When you talk, and I know you have before, since we brought you on last year, about the issue of great veteran players who, for various reasons, loss of form, injury, undergo moments of self-doubt. Champ Bailey fits that description this year. I think he's an interesting guy to watch the last 2 weeks, maybe the most interesting individual figure from the Bronco point of view, as he apparently has been cleared to play. He's been practicing full speed. What about Champ Bailey?
Well,
in these last 2 weeks,
yeah.
How much can we really expect from Bailey as a defensive contributor looking ahead to the playoffs? How much of his form can he regain?
Yeah, I don't think from a physiological perspective, I don't think much. You know, again, I've said it before here, you know, for the first 9 to 12 years of his career, he was the best there was. I mean, just pure athleticism, change of directions, unmatched, great tackler in the open field, you know, all those things. But he's not what he once was, and that's just the reality. You know, I heard Chad Brown earlier today make an assertion that in years 12 through 14, he wasn't the physical player he was.
Right.
I think that's very honest of him to say that. You know, and people need to be, let's be honest about Champ is not the physiological specimen he once was. And that's okay. I mean, he's aging. He's 36 years old.
Oh, he acknowledges that. He says he's 35. Hey, you know, I'm 35, not 25, he
right.
said yesterday.
But also what happens is the psychological issue comes up as well, because once self-doubt creeps in the mind of an athlete, then you start second-guessing yourself. And at the corner position, you cannot have that. And I suspect the Bronco coaches know all this about him, the physiological, the psychological, that are starting to creep into his mind. So I think in terms of expectations for Champ, physiologically, I wouldn't say a lot. In terms of leadership, he can add something still, but I don't think that necessarily has to be on the field. It can be on the sidelines.
303-228-1043, 295-88 on the Total Beverage text line. We'll talk a little bit as we close out here today about what is going on in youth sports, and Dr. Perea has some thoughts on that, expanding on what he has presented to us over the last year or so in this regard. And we'll get on to that subject a bit before we depart today at the top of the hour on your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Up with you, 11:48 as we close out on this Football Friday morning, 20th day of December 2013, on your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. One more question from the Total Beverage text line at 29588. This is an interesting one. For the doctor, how do athletes maintain a high level of intrinsic motivation in the presence of so many extrinsic motivating factors? You're talking about this new age of media and all the noise, or to put it in a slightly different way, social forces coming at them in
yes.
various directions.
Yeah, that's a great question. intrinsic motivation is achieved by focusing on the process, not the outcome. And you hear the Bronco coaches talk about this. They say, don't look at the scoreboard. Don't look at the standings. Focus on the process. You know, Nick Saban makes that a big deal at Alabama football, that you focus on the things that get you to the outcome, but you focus on a daily, a weekly basis on the process. And that's what I really emphasize to my clients when I work with them, is that to stay intrinsically motivated is you focus on the technique, the steps, the rhythm, all those type of things, the protocols that you focus before every play versus the outcome of that. Because if you focus on the outcome, then you're going to be extrinsically driven, and that will unwind itself once athletes get out on their own. For example, we're going to talk in a few minutes about youth sport. And one of the things that I really emphasize to my clients is for parents to emphasize the process versus the outcome. Because if you have a volleyball player, for example, and she has 12 kills, and after the match you say, wow, great job, you had 12 kills.
Yeah.
Well, the problem with that is the next time she has 5 kills or 6 kills, she's going to perceive that she didn't perform as well. But if you focus on the process and said, wow, you really looked great, great effort, you moved very well, your technique looked great, you snapped your wrist, that's the process, and that will what keep athletes intrinsically motivated versus extrinsic. Great question, though.
Youth sports. We've talked about issues pertaining to youth sports quite a bit with you over the past year. You have a tip today for parents.
Yes.
Kind of along the lines of what you were just discussing.
Yes.
Ride home after a game, after a match.
Yes.
How important are those conversations, those interactions?
Oh, vital, Sandy. You know, I work with adolescent athletes all over the nation, and I do workshops and presentations. And one of the biggest things that we have found where there's a real disconnect is between parents and athletes on the ride home, if you will, or after matches. And let me break it down like this. When your athlete is done competing, and let's say they didn't necessarily play so well, or let's say they didn't play at all, and then they get in the car with you and they're riding home and you're asking them questions like, well, why didn't your coach play you today? Or why does your coach play this player in front of this player? I think so-and-so is better. You have just given your adolescent athlete the green light to doubt their coach's competency and acumen. Let me explain to you what happens physiologically and psychologically with youth athletics. So let's say you have a baseball player, and they just got done playing a game. They get in the car with you. Well, they are physiologically and psychologically aroused, and we call that somatic, okay? Somatic is body, and cognitive is thinking,
right?
Arousal and anxiety. They are highly aroused, and when you start asking questions from a cognitive anxiety perspective, it's very difficult for them to process because they're highly aroused. You need to give them time to cool down. So what we recommend to parents is on the ride home, you give them 2 compliments and 0 questions, okay? Now, a lot of parents will say, boy, how am I going to do that? 2 compliments is easy. Even if they didn't play well, you can say, you know what? You guys did great as a team, great effort, you'll get them next time. If they didn't play at all, you can still say, you know, I enjoy coming out and supporting you and watching you play. It's still positive. Let them cool down. Let them debrief. Then when you get home, let them come to you. Okay? Let them go out, change the direction. You know, we're going to go to the movies. We can hang out with friends. But let them come back to you, because then that's when they're ready. Let that somatic, meaning body arousal and anxiety, cool down. Let that cognitive, somatic, and cognitive anxiety cool down before you ask them questions. Because we have found when we have done research that athletes, youth athletes, when their parents ask them questions or critique their game, that's when athletes shut down, they stop talking to their parents, and then there becomes a lot of tension, not only in the ride home, but then at the home after that. And so in an effort to really minimize that, we want parents to really understand that their job is not to coach their athletes. Their job is to love them as parents and be fully supportive of them. They have coaches, and that's vital, so vital to remember.
Couple of questions from the text line before we take our leave on this Friday morning. Quick shout-out from the 303 to CSU. Good luck tomorrow. Psychologically, physiologically, how important was it for CSU to get those 7 wins this year and play in a bowl game after an absence of several years in the bowl scene?
Yeah, absolutely.
Jim McElwain,
yes,
in his second year.
Yes, absolutely vital to the psychological momentum of that program. that will thrust them into the off-season program with full psychological and emotional and physiological momentum going forward. The other thing it does, it puts more expectations going forward into next year, which I'm sure Mack will meet those expectations. But, yeah, congratulations to the CSU football program for reaching this, the first step of many in Coach Mack's plan going forward.
Yeah, and again, you've been around him from his days back in Alabama as the offensive coordinator, and he follows that same general line of thinking, doesn't he, as far as program building is concerned?
Yeah, absolutely. And he, when I was just talking about the process, he's a total process guy. He focuses on the process. I know his mental enhancement guy real well, and I know what they do, and they really focus on the process up there and really try to get them going in the right direction.
All right, last time we had you on, you offered a bit of a projection for the Broncos and the Chiefs. You weren't right on that particular game, but I think you identified the Bronco condition and maybe some areas of concern at that point. This is about a month ago when we last have you on.
Yep.
That the Broncos go 2-2 over the last four games. We'll have you again once the playoffs begin, obviously, before the Broncos play a divisional playoff game, so you have a chance to talk about that game in particular. But your sense as we wrap up today of the Broncos with 2 weeks left in the regular season, the quantitative indications still remain pretty positive. First in the AFC West, first overall in the AFC. Third straight year as AFC West champions. They're close to that. Second straight year as a number one seed. That doesn't happen very often going back the last 10, 15 years in the NFL.
Right.
Consecutive years as a number one seed.
Yeah.
So there are few positive signs. Your overall assessment of the Broncos at this point would be what?
I think if they can focus on the run and develop that aspect of their game, and they're able to do that successfully in these last 2 weeks, and again, they're not playing against the best competition, but they are playing against NFL caliber teams. But if they can develop the running game to a point where they can use it, operationally in the playoffs, and then if in defense they can get their more of the task and the social cohesion built up going into the playoffs, then I like their chances. I really do. I think they, if they got home field advantage and they are willing to commit to the running game, not just throw the ball around the yard, then I think I like their chances. So when I look forward, I think Denver really has a chance to go deep into the playoffs and perhaps fulfill, the expectations of a lot of people. But I also would caution people in being critical thinking and saying they could also be one and done. If they, if they end up giving their defense too much to handle, getting them on the field so much when they really are lacking that solid defensive line up front in terms of that cohesion, then I think they could put themselves in a real bad spot.
It's always a pleasure. And
Thank you, Sandy. We'll
bring you back before the playoffs begin. We also want to remind people, and this came via CBS4 about an hour ago, all day today, the Burger King across from Arapahoe High School is donating all proceeds to the Claire Davis Fund. So we want to make you aware of that. A traumatic event in our city's history a week ago today, and our prayers are with Claire Davis and this terrific thing Burger King is doing, again, right across the street from Arapahoe High School, donating all proceeds to the Claire Davis Fund. Dr. Perea, we'll see you in January. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you and your family, Sandy. Always great being here.
Drew and Scott are up just ahead, and then it's The Drive with Big Al and D-Mac on your home for the best live and local coverage. The Broncos and the NFL. It's Football Friday. Hey, Bud Light Football Friday on Denver Sports Station. Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.